So yeah, so from a psychological perspective, that's what made me think there's something in this. And then I thought, I'm going to like really push the boundaries here. So I typed in amputee model and found Victoria Modesta, who was a beautiful woman who was modeling the front cover of Bazaar magazine with her leg prosthetic to like one side. And it had this full story about how she'd elected to have an amputation at the age of 16 because she'd had lots of problems with her leg and it was causing her a lot of grief. And yeah, and so I thought, wow, that's a person who's really beautiful, bold, strong, and whether or not if she had something alternative, it would be like a demonstration of her strength.
Hi, I'm Nick.
I am Bonte.
And I'm Bryn, and this is Chalk It Up, a podcast that celebrates all things Sussex through stories and conversations with inspiring local people.
In this episode, we speak to the immensely talented artist, Sophie de Oliveira Barata. Sophie's a good friend of ours, and it's probably best if I leave it to her to describe the nature of her work. But it's best to say that it's as unique as it is beautiful. We absolutely loved talking to Sophie and really hope you enjoy listening to this episode.
Hello, Sophie. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm very good. This is exciting.
Thank you very much for coming on here.
Pleasure.
So, Sophie de Oliveira Barata, have I pronounced it correctly?
Very well put.
Can you start by telling us what your name means?
Oh, yeah. Have I told you this before? That's why you're asking. Yeah, well, you know.
I'm sure you know. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's so Sophie is wise, and then de Oliveira is olive tree, and then Barata also means cheap, but I'm going to say it's cockroach. So I've got wise cockroach of the olive tree.
Excellent.
Yes. That's what you've got here today.
Yeah. How accurately do you feel that represents you as a person?
It can be wise in some ways, but not all. But yeah.
And you've brought a box with you today.
I have. I've got a couple of limbs. I brought a box of limbs,
yeah.
But alternative style limbs.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's why you've brought me here.
That's part of the reason why I brought you here.
That's why I'm interesting.
Yeah.
I've got a box of limbs.
So before we open the box,
yeah,
can you sort of explain to anyone listening exactly what it is that you do for a living?
Yes. So I create realistic-looking and more known for the alternative-style prosthetics for amputees. All sculpted... Well, the realistic ones are sculpted in silicone, so I make, like, toes, fingers, partial feet, partial hands, full arm and leg covers. I made a bottom once, but that's aside. For someone who wanted an extension, I've made a few like random requests on the side. But generally, I stick to limbs. And then, but I'm more known for the alternative ones, which I collaborate with other artisans and kind of make more kind of outlandish ideas.
Yeah.
So it's more like wearable art.
I want to know a bit more about the bottom.
Did someone want
a normal looking bottom?
She was quite big already. It took three of us to cast her, and but she wanted a bigger bottom.
Yeah.
And it was her 30th anniversary, and she didn't want to go through surgery, so she was like, "I'd really like to have a bottom that I could just like put on and off." And she rocked up at the end with she put the. I had this massive cast of this bottom and I was sculpting this larger bottom on top of it with maternity pants, I think I seem to remember choosing to sculpt on. And then, she rocked up, put them on and then put her leather trousers on top.
No way.
Like, wow, that's so really heavy and sweaty. But, it seemed to tick the box for her. So,
no way, yeah. Wow. And how often does she, do you know how often she wears the bottom?
Is this
a regular thing?
I think it was a surprise for her 30th anniversary for her husband.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Crikey. So, yeah.
Oh, amazing.
But let's stick to the limbs. With the bottom story.
And when was the first time? So were you making realistic limbs before going into the sort of more conceptual and artistic style?
So I've always had I guess, a parallel with the medicine and art. So I studied art and then worked at a hospital and just like doing teas and coffees. And I remember them doing this big recreation scene where they'd get makeup artists on board so that they could reenact like a big tragedy and a scenario kind of thing and make it more believable. And that's when I thought about getting into special effects. So then I got into special effects, then got into prosthetics, and then heard about a job making realistic looking limbs for amputees. And I thought it'd be like the ultimate challenge. So, you know, without the tricks of the camera, making something look like fool the eye, like trick people's what's real and what's not. And then, so I did that and worked for this company for like 8 years. And then in my spare time, I would just, they knew I'd stay behind, but not, I had so much energy to stay up till like 4 a.m. sculpting all these extra projects. And I'd leave in the morning and like pretend to like be cycling in fresh from home. I'd just go around the block. and so I'd have all these, like, I'd have a corner where I'd hide all these creations that I'd make. And then I got into more alternative stuff because there wasn't really anything at the time. It was more like you have the bare structure on show or you hide it. And I thought, well, you know, blend into society. And I thought, well, there's a place for that. But I thought it'd be great to create a kind of a project where it inspired people to celebrate the difference and do more kind of wearable art.
And what was the first bit of kind of wearable art that someone wore that you made?
There's quite a sweet story actually. So I had a little girl that came in. So I would work with prosthetists. So the prosthetist is the limb fitter. They're like the clinician and they give us all the information. And so I would, you know, be making a realistic limb. I would have a cast of the other side, so copy. I'd get a colour match chart with colour swatches and photos. And then I'd make the job to spec. And these prosthetists would be like in the country, but also abroad, and we'd get sent the information. So we kind of rarely saw the clients, but there was one prosthetist downstairs and he happened to have one little girl come in. I think she was about 2 and she had this tragedy. It was all in the news at the time. And she was she was in a pushchair with her mum and her grandmother going to the hospital to meet her new cousin who'd just been born, and a bus had kind of come onto the pavement and unfortunately pinned the grandmother to the wall, and she died at the scene. And then the little girl was taken out of the pram and lost her leg, was amputated at the scene, and the mum had really bad scarring. And so it was really like I could see for her mum, it was like every time she was coming to the appointments, it was like a reminder, seeing the leg, it was a reminder of the loss of her mother as well. But the little girl was quite like, she was just really bouncy. And she'd said to me, oh, I'd really like to have, when I saw her, she was 4, it was a bit later. And she said, oh, I'd really like to have some pictures. I think it was Peppa Pig at the time, of some little kind of cartoons on my leg. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. And then they partnered me up with her because I was like the child, the adult child in the body. And so I'd kind of take her into the corner every time I saw her. I'd be like, hey, you know, we can up it next time. We could do this and this and this. And the mum was kind of quite relaxed about it. And so I could see for her, rather than having like a poorer version of what everyone else had, which she got through insurance. So insurance is interesting because it's like they sometimes say, oh, well, we replace like for like. So it's like, you know, we can give you what as close to what you had before. So that would mean like making a realistic leg. But later on, I challenged them to say, well, that person's not quite the same necessarily psychologically anymore. Mm. And rather, why have something that it's not the same anymore. So, but anyway, going back, this little girl was, I could see from a rehabilitation perspective, she was really kind of getting a lot from the kind of creative side. So it was engaging her with her leg, and she was like, oh yeah, I could have my friends. Their friends were getting involved as what she's going to have next time, and meant it was like a conversation starter.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, that sounds, there's something really in that, which was really nice. And rather than having like routine appointments that you just have. So yeah, so from a psychological perspective, that's what made me think there's something in this. And then I thought, I'm going to like really push the boundaries here. So I typed in amputee model and found Victoria Modesta, who was this beautiful woman who was modelling for the front cover of Bazaar magazine with her leg prosthetic to like one side. And it had this full story about how she'd elected to have an amputation at the age of 16 because she'd had lots of problems with her leg and it was causing her a lot of grief. And yeah, and so I thought, wow, that's a person who's really beautiful, bold, strong, and whether or not if she had something alternative, it would be like a demonstration of her strength. And and she was totally up for it. So, yes, we started working. That was a really long answer.
No, that's, that's exactly the sort of answer we want. Thank you. And so you, a couple of things I want to pick up with that. The insurance company, so are they now more open-minded to the idea that actually it's like for like is actually
it's a bit dated it's, it, kind
yeah,
of thing.
It doesn't quite get you.
No, I actually went for to a talk in Manchester, which was full of insurance brokers and well, they had lawyers and there as well. And I spoke about the psychological benefit of having something alternative, not necessarily as extreme as what I do, but it, you know, there's lots of now there are a lot of startup companies that are doing more kind of interesting applications that are a bit more affordable and user-friendly and stuff. So, yeah,
and how was that received by, you know, organisations that are essentially...
Really well.
Really?
Yeah, they were coming up to me afterwards saying that they were going to go through their books trying to find people that they would potentially be... Yeah, that they could kind of say, oh, this is another option. It's quite tricky for insurance people because they have to... Because not one leg, it's amazing, you just take it for granted, like not one leg would do, I mean, legs and arms are different, but for a leg, not one leg will do it all. So you could, you know, you'd have a swimming leg, you'd have a running leg, you'd have, you know, the blades are amazing, but not for everything. And yeah, you could, just have, suitcase full of legs, really, if you wanted to go on holiday and have a normal action of holiday that regular person.
And so this little girl that you had sort of started this journey with, how old is she now, roughly? And do you know what...
I kind of lost touch with her, but I think she's doing really well in ballet. So she's, and I know they were looking for a kind of particular limb for her ballet classes, but she's gone to dance school, so
that's incredible.
I think she's doing really well.
And that and the relationship that you started with this model, so how did that progress?
Really well. I mean, she was already in that frame of mind. I mean, there was someone that was doing something. So, well, Alexander McQueen had commissioned some wooden carved legs for a project of his for the catwalk, which went down a storm, and an amazing model called Amy Mullins had kind of was, I think, the first model kind of wearing the cheetah legs and the running blades down the catwalk, and I think they dressed them like cheetah legs, as proper cheetah, and so that was quite compelling, and I think Victoria had seen that and was quite inspired by that, so she was already kind of that mindset, thinking that she'd be open to those ideas, and she had a gig at the Paralympic closing ceremony, and she was asked to be a performing artist there, and got given this kind of lycra suit full of Swarovski crystals, and no one would be the wiser that she was a amputee, and she was like, well, you know, this is the Paralympic ceremony, surely we should celebrate the difference and highlight, you know, this. And she said, I know this girl and she can do something, and said, oh, okay. So I got given all these crystals and massive table full of crystals and diamantes, and I made this kind of leg that had like a big like shards coming through, and then this kind of pole, iridescent pole in the middle, and with big chunk missing, and it was like really eye catching, and that went down a real storm, and wow. And some other piece that went in the New York Times, and yeah, and it kind of spiraled from there, and she's like doing her own really incredible music videos, and she's gone into advertising as well. She was doing something for Rolls Royce. We did this leg which had like this electric spark inside, so that was a really cool collaboration. So she's in America now, and yeah. I've probably made about six legs for her. So one of them was the spike leg, which was kind of quite went viral.
I've seen that. Yeah.
And that was that actually came. So it's a mixture. Sometimes it's something that I kind of dream up, and then other times it's a real, you know, we mash our ideas together. And that one actually came to her in a dream. She was thinking, oh, what's the ultimate kind of like power dressing? And in a dream, she just saw herself in the spike, like, and so that was quite visceral.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to ask about ideas and where it comes from, whether it comes from the person you're working with or with you or that sort of collaboration. In terms of the stuff that the ideas that you come up with, and I know that you work in, you don't just do limbs, that you do other types of art as well. Like, where do you draw inspiration from? Is it like a constant process, or do you kind of refine and hone, and like what's your sort of creative process, if you can describe it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I kind of do less limbs. I mean, now I kind of more focusing on like approaching amputees that are performing artists or doing something that I find interesting about their character. So I approach them with a project in mind, and then that piece is normally filmed or photographed and then exhibited, because I feel like it kind of reaches a broader audience, and it means that I'm not limited by everyday constraints. I can really push kind of concepts. So I think I just get inspired by all sorts of things. It's a bit like a skateboarder going to getting into skateboarding and then suddenly like walking down the street and seeing a curb and thinking, oh yeah, I could really ride up that. Or, you know, I'll be in the kind of a city and I'll just like look at the way that like some architecture and the way that glass meets, it sounds a bit wanky, but nature, or it can just be anything that I feel like visually really exciting, and I'll bank ideas and then I'll if there's a project. Yeah, for example, there was one that was recently a cuckoo clock leg, and I'd actually had that at the back of my head for ages. I was thinking, someone I think had said, oh, what would your ultimate one be? And I think I was thinking something absurd and like funny, and it was a little bird popping out the knee. And that had been parked for a while, and then I'd met someone that I thought this could work with, and it just kind of, spiraled.
And was it, did you collaborate with anyone else on that?
On that one, yeah, like a local artist, woodcarver called Sam Rudman. Sam, So he's this woodcarver who did this incredible carving, and then I worked with this guy, there were a couple of guys, but Rory Thompson, who did the electronics. So we had this pendulum that swung defying gravity. So when she was upside down, the pendulum was still swinging and ticking, and it changed the speed. So it was like fast motion, slow motion, because we did a film to it, and it was all kind of trippy with time. A little bird popping out, and the clock as well inside. So. Yeah.
And so what's the name of the the name of the business or the your brand that you're under?
Yeah, the Alternative Limb Project. And then I always collaborate with Chris Parsons from Design Prosthetics, who I work with. He's the limb fitter. I work with other limb fitters, but we can work together from scratch at the beginning of a project. So it means that like anything's possible, rather than receiving a limb and then just working on that structure, we can actually reinvent the limb completely. Recently I did a pole dancing leg for this guy who was in his 50s, beautiful, tattooed, and he had this like elegant leg that matched his tattoos. It kind of went like an hourglass into like this hoof which kind of cups the pole, and then there's this like kinetic sculpture, metal sculpture that spins in the back. So when he's spinning around the pole, the kinetic sculpture spinning around inside the leg, and just yeah, all sorts of interesting projects.
I think, is it time to open the box?
You can open the box, yeah. So I brought... I also forgot to mention the lady who actually wore the clock leg called Welly O'Brien. So, yeah, she's a dancer who works for worked at this company called Canduco Dance Company, which is disabled and non-disabled dancers. So, yeah, that was really nice working with her. So, yeah, so this hat... I've got a hand here that I sculpted. This is, like, I'm looking at this, like, being really embarrassed because it's, like, so old. But this is one of the things that I was compelled to make when I was, like, young and, like, training. And just to see what a hand looks like going backwards. Oh. So I'd sculpted the top of the hand to fit over the palm of my hand. So that I could do that.
That's so weird.
I mean, yeah. Now having kids and not much time, I just think, what? Cheers to do that.
But your kids must absolutely love it.
Yeah, no, they do.
I mean, I've been around your house, you have these bits and bobs. In fact, I think I've drunk a shot of tequila out of a prosthetic foot.
Oh, have you?
At a party around your house.
I did that.
But, yeah, I don't know whether I should be saying that.
No, I think, like, all kids are not that... They sometimes kind of, like, oh, yeah, my mum just does this. But then they encounter people like, she does what? Hang on a minute. And they kind of, they get excited. So this is one... of a pair of feet shoes that I made. Actually, this one has got pavement and kind of like grass inside it because I just thought I'd reverse what happens with feet walking. But actually, I made myself a pair of feet shoes.
Is that your foot?
This isn't. But I've got another pair that I've made for myself. They slip on over socks, which is kind of fun.
And do you ever wear them out and about?
I do.
And do people bat an eyelid, or they just think they're like their actual fit?
It's the usual, typical British kind of like, I didn't see anything. I'll turn around straight away.
It's something weird, can ignore it.
And then this is a really exciting piece that...
I've seen that online.
Yeah, so it's not all rigged up, because it's just... come back from exhibition, which is why it's got this piece in. So this was a collaboration. There are a few of us on this, and it was piggybacked off the idea of a friend of mine's called Danny Claude, who invented the third thumb, which is this like 3D printed thumb that fits on anyone's hand and is controlled with the sensors in the shoes. So you deliberately push the sensors down with your toes, big toes, up and down, and it sends a signal, Bluetooth signal, to the thumb and moves the thumb. So I was like, oh, it would be really cool to do that kind of technology with an alternative limb. So we said, yeah, we could do that. And I was like, yeah, let's do a tentacle. So this is like the second version. And yeah, so these are the electronics inside. So you've got a kind of gold-plated socket that goes over the arm. Got a harness here, clips on, and we've got there's a silicon liner that goes in, so that's the interface between the socket and the arm. And then you've got the chassis here, which has got all the electronics inside, and then this kind of vertebrae that's been 3D printed, and all the channels for the cables to run down. And it has like 4 degrees of movement, so it kind of coils around. So yeah, so this beautiful lady Kelly Knox modelled this, and it was weird because actually at the end of the shoot, she said in her sleep she was actually moving. She'd got used to moving her toes and felt that she was actually moving the arm. So it almost programmed. And actually, Danny, the lady who did the third thumb, is now doing neuroscience work with. At Cambridge for the third thumb, and they're looking at the remapping of the brain and in terms of having an extra digit and the relation between that digit and the next finger and how that kind of changes the mapping in the brain because you've got 6 fingers all of a sudden or an extra thumb.
That's absolutely beautiful bit of work. Where were you exhibiting it?
So this one was exhibited in... Oh my gosh, I've forgotten the exhibition. But part of the exhibition was called Future of Everything, and it was this major digital and sculptural exhibition in Athens. Central Park, and so it was out in the Central Park. And then it's also going to Las Vegas, where I've got a kind of residency there as part of the Bodies exhibition. Do you remember the crazy German guy? Do you remember that crazy German guy?
He's still going.
Hayward for a while, wasn't it? It was the Hayward Gallery.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, ago. Yeah. And yeah. I think actually...
The TV programme as well.
Yeah, well, I think this guy was the pioneer, and he came out with Body Worlds, and then... He subsequently, other people started working with him and then developed their own techniques. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's like an educational exhibition where they have lungs of the smoker and blah, blah, blah. And then this and a regular non-smoker. And then he was quite sensational, I think, because he was doing kind of quite, it was
didn't,
like became...
Didn't he slice someone...
Yeah,
it's just a slice through a person.
Yeah, and just lots of slices, a bit like Damien Hirst kind of thing. And you can look through on all angles and see slides and, embryos and all sorts. And then they have a room dedicated to kind of alternative limbs, which seems a bit of a jump to me, but,
How did you sort of link in with that exhibition?
They just contacted me. I've kind of been fortunate enough to have people. So, this subject's it excites people because it's like, it's the arts, fashion, technology, medicine all come together, and then there's a person with their own story behind each project, and each project's completely unique, so I never kind of replicate any one design. Mm. So I think, that's usually... So, arts galleries and science, medicine, exhibitions.
So if I, there is a story behind all of this. I guess you have a goal, So can you either mention or educate us a bit more about your goals and your mission in this?
Why are you doing this? I think it's just to... I think it probably comes back to the first, my first point about being fascinated with, even with special effects, like blurring the boundaries of what's real and what's fantasy. And I guess I'm kind of getting to do that in real life, in real scenarios, and then challenging people's perceptions about disability. But also I think, we've come a long way now, but I think just about the body in general, what the body can be in future... I mean, it could touch on transhumanism, but for me, it's kind of being really playful, a space to be really playful, and it's about positive celebration. I think I remember one lady coming to me, and she said, I was born with my arm just below my elbow. I've been fine with it. I've never worn a prosthetic." But she said, "I can always tell." She said, "I've learned the art of kind of hiding, like gesticulating without my arm there, almost like, or using it in a way that it's almost not noticeable." And then suddenly she said, "I'll be having a conversation, and then mid-flow, I can see that they've spotted that I'm an amputee, and there'll be like this kind of awkward moment." And she said, "It's almost like you could freeze the moment." And she would really like to just be able to say, "Hey, I know you've just seen that. It's all cool. I was born like this. Blah, 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 blah. Right, let's get back to the conversation." But she said, for her, having something alternative would be like, it's like it kind of screams, "Look at me." And it's like, but in a not a kind of showing off way, but just like, this is, I'm all right with it. And you're inviting people to look in a way. And so, therefore, you can just end up having, you can kind of get around that kind of pity. But I mean, I think we've come a long way now. So I think there's that definitely in the beginning of the project, it was really focused on that. And there were issues. But I think now with soldiers, ex-military coming, and then things like the Paralympics, it's really kind of...
That really hugely took off, didn't it?
Yeah,
took the London Olympics.
Yeah, so like, much so that anyone who was an amputee was like, "Oh, wow, they must be a Paralympian." It was just like, Jesus Christ, it's hard enough getting to work.
So following from that, for you, when we know how difficult it is when you are seem different.
Yeah.
In a way where you perfectly want to come across as, yes, I am different. I'm celebrating the difference of who I am. And in effect, it's not inhibiting me to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
But actually, I could have fun. I could have this, you know, much more celebration, so you can see what I have and how proud I am to be able to. And it is, does that make, because obviously the whole idea is you know, having a disability is a different to actually having inability. So most people who have got disability want to be able to do things that are that are within their capability. So, but by you supporting what they are doing, does that then mean that you know the mission and the goal that you have are being achieved when someone is actually celebrating?
Yeah, no, for sure. And just kind of, I think it's, yeah. Oh, I don't know. I've just totally gone blank. Sorry, just quickly gone blank. We have to pause there.
Okay, carry on.
But yeah, no. Yeah, I think there's a danger sometimes, which I've really wanted to stay away from, which is like, oh, you're fixing people, just because I think psychologically it can really help. It can help. You're taking kind of ownership of your limb. You're like, for example, little Pollyanna. She's kind of like engaging with her limb. It's kind of, that means she's engaging with others, and then therefore conversation is more open, and you're not shying away from conversations, and that's good for everyone.
You did a project for the Railway Museum.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting. I think you may have told me this before, I've read it, that the railways used to have their own prosthetic makers, because so many of the men lost their limbs working on the railway. So they used to sort of place to supply them.
Yes, they had the skills and the materials to be able to supply their own limbs. Yeah, so that was Darlington Railway Museum, which is where the steam engines first, they had a factory there. And they discovered they had this their own prosthetic department, and they had some tools, so they did this exhibition. And then they approached the Arts Council to do kind of like a... they'd heard about my work, and they were up for doing some kind of new piece, an art piece with a limb. And so I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds great. I could do some kind of... it just gave me an excuse to go completely absurd, because COVID happened as well. So it went from one train-themed limb to two people attached to... So one guy with his arm just below his elbow, and a lady, Welly again, with her leg just, like, above her knee. So I made an arm for him and a leg for her in collaboration with others that fitted into this big landscape. And we filmed with his arm, which was like a train, like an old caged kind of metal part of a station, just to the elbow, with his forearm as this kind of statue, like pointing on a hillside over to a little station called Limbridge, which then connected to her, who, and she has this leg with also this amazing metal work by James Kearney, who I collaborated with, and with this realistic lower leg where it kind of, with the train line that slots into her, so she slots into the landscape, they both slot into the landscape, and then this little steam engine, this little train, passes through the landscape from him to her, with it, smoke and everything, and it was
unbelievable.
And then we turned it into music, like a music video. So it's like, so it was the first time I had like a proper budget. I was like, no, I'm not gonna make any money from this. I'm just gonna like push the ideas to extreme.
Where did you get the idea for that?
I can't remember. I think I just was thinking of trains and limbs. Oh, I was thinking of scale. I really wanted to play with scale, and I was thinking about, you know, little train passing through someone's leg, but then them being, that's right, and having some kind of filming, because we put a camera on the little train as well, so it saw it from that perspective. And I was thinking of, like, somehow having this locomotive, like, moving around a limb, passing people walking by, and just playing with like tripping out with scale.
Like a theatre of absurd.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And do you have, is there any sort of areas of, or things that, that you use for inspiration that are perhaps, that people might see as being unrelated?
But you know,
books that you delve into or films that you like that you draw on.
Actually, just going into the local kind of antique shops is really good because it's like a really good way of scrambling your brain and kind of like you just look at something really beautiful that's completely unrelated, an object, and you could just, oh, that could be, I could somehow work with that piece and incorporate that into a limb, or if that was scaled up, or No, I mean, I often get inspiration just being out in nature, actually. In the back of my mind, things have maybe been banked there and they just start coming out.
Yeah.
So just kind of, yeah.
Favourite walks, then? We're talking nature. We can now be into Sussex.
Well, I live halfway up Chapel Hill Road.
Your places that you go to, yeah.
Yeah, I have Chapel Hill Road in Lewis in the little cabin. And, so I often go on... Yeah, up that hill and around the back there.
Up near the golf course.
Past the golf course all the way around. And then woods, like the other day, it's really nice. I guess, kind of scale. I really like playing with scale. Like, so I was on our dinghy the other day down in from Alfriston to Cookmere Haven Beach, and going through Alfriston with this, like... where the river is really, really tight, and this massive pleasure boat dinghy, six-person dinghy, trying to push it through, and all the reeds like coming over the top of you, and you're, feeling really small and in this big. But I guess things like that—it's kind of bringing kind of the absurd adventure and magicalness to like everyday life, and trying to incorporate, I guess it, one of the missions is to kind of. Yeah, be really playful and bring joy and kind of like joyful spirit and an adventure into an excitement and absurdity into the everyday, I guess. Yeah. It excites me.
Yeah. And you like adventure?
Yeah.
Like little trips. Mm. Yeah. The way you're talking about
them. And even the process of making a limb is like brilliant. Yeah. But, you know, collaborating with people and it's feels like a big journey.
It's beautiful there, isn't it? Cookmere Haven. Where the river snakes.
Yeah. It really does snake, doesn't it? I'm sure it's just beyond this bend. Four bends later.
So how long does it normally take you to do...
Make a prosthetic.
Yeah.
So a regular limb. I mean, I mainly mention legs. I do make. I've made arms, but generally, prosthetic arms can be kind of cumbersome and annoying, and they have a lot of. You get 3D printed, lightweight, and electronic hands, but they can be kind of cumbersome and batteries. Like people often, get excited about it and then don't use them. But often legs are made, and I make a realistic leg cover could be like a month, would take a month turnaround. And then an alternative one could be anything for a month, and I don't know, some of them taking a couple of years just because back and forth with the client or whatever. But I remember one limb which was quite interesting, like that whole idea of blending in to, trying to make something... believable and trick the eye. It's just so hard to mimic real skin, and if you think about just natural tanning, but let alone tanning, if you put your arm up for a while and then you bring it down after a couple of minutes next to your other arm, notice it's completely different color to the other one. It's just like your blood circulation. So there was one lady that I made this leg for, and she'd actually lost her leg due to blood circulation problems. And we were like, okay, no, I think we've got it. We've nailed it. And she disappeared, and then she came back. And I had the leg ready for her, and it was in the corner of the room. And as she came in, I was checking her out and looking at the leg, and I was like, yeah. And then she put it on, and she was like, oh, it's really amazing, but it's not quite matching. And I was like, yeah, it's okay. Maybe you should have a little walk around. And she walked around, and it's like, kid you not, it was like a camouflage. She was like a chameleon, her whole body camouflaged to the leg. And it was because when I matched her in that moment. She was, it was in with that blood circulation, and then it went out again. So it was like, you know, it was more an extreme case because of her.
Challenging thing that you wouldn't think of.
Yeah.
I remember you did quite a massive skinning project once. Was it winter before last?
Yes. Yeah, I did. So it was. Yeah, we can't leave it at that. Skinning project. It's terrifying. I made a giant head for a project. So that was unrelated to my normal work, but with this company called Creative Giants, who helped the charity Crisis and create this massive scale homeless person. And he was about 5 metres, but from bottom to head, he was sitting down, so it was 5 metres up. So I think the head was about just almost a metre and a half, almost two. And, it was great fun.
And how do you approach, you know, deciding what skin to give
that head? That was really interesting because it was all about... bringing, once again, it's kind of in line with my other work in that you're making a point of something. So it was like this, you can't miss this person. So that's why they scaled this person up so big. And what they did was, it was really clever. They used a technology where they took I think about 50 faces of homeless people or formerly homeless or people experiencing homelessness. And they did a face merge of all those people. And then from that face, they did a CAD cutout, CNC in wood. And then they gave that to me and they offset it by the amount of skin that I sculpted. And then I did all the details. And, yeah, I used, like, broom bristles for stubble. And I used a walnut and avocado. It was amazing texture for the skin.
No way.
Yeah. Wow. So I was just pressing... I just went through so many avocados.
Where's the
guacamole?
Where's the body? The piece now?
He's homeless. He's just moving right here. Yeah. I think he is. He's on the road. I think that, you know, they had him at King's Cross, outside King's Cross Station, and then they moved him to Birmingham outside a church. And then unfortunately, he's in storage, and I think they're waiting to be able to push him to get more use. I hope they will, yeah. That was the idea, that they move him to all these different locations. So, yeah. But I think it costs about $10,000 to actually move him and to secure the space as to where it would be and have someone on site and all that. So, yeah, I think they did really, really well from that that Christmas, yeah.
And if I may ask, what is the future like, you know, in this industry, in this environment? What is in the pipeline that excites you?
One thing I was going to say from earlier actually was one step that was kind of not said before was when I started making these pieces, it really did start getting different kind of attention in that people would respond, "Oh my God, that's so cool. I really want one," without like thought, like, you know, the kind of no PC, like no thought behind it. Like, obviously it would be quite challenging to be an amputee and you kind of be happy with. Other people would
with,
just
with full limbs.
Full limbs would be
kind of one.
And they would just say that. But actually there was a guy that I was walking with, having made a really cool piece with him. He was an ex-military and he had a realistic foot, and he said, "I really want to see my toes again, but other than that, you can kind of just go wild." So I used the back of his hair to insert it on his toes and made it super realistic. And then we did something really abstract above. And I went for a walk with him, and I remember someone passing, "Oh my God, that's amazing. Wow. So hang on a minute. Right. So that's your foot. So what is going on up there then?"
Oh, right. They thought it was his real foot.
Yeah. Totally. And I was just like, "What are you thinking? This is obviously not his foot. How could that be?" And he was just really excited by the response and change conversation from pity to just "Wow, that's exciting." And it's just like, we're really refreshing. And then I remember making this one limb for one lady, and she is initially I told her about the project and she was like, yeah, it sounds great, but not really for me. And then like 2 years later, she was like, you know that project? I'd really like some lasers in my leg. And I was just thinking, I'd really like some lasers. And she said, and she had this, we did all this. And then, yeah, she was like, I could just walk for 100 metres and then just like loads of people coming up to me. She was like, it was really exhausting, but really, it was just like a power uplift. Like
yeah. Empowering.
Yeah, really yeah. empowering, but you couldn't yeah. do it every day kind of thing. Yeah. 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 But so you said about the future, I think, yeah, so what made me think that was that sometimes people get carried away and say, oh, you know, alternative limbs will be better than realistic limbs, and I think got far to go. But I think, number one, an amputee is kind of reliant on their limb fitter for all little tiny tweaks here and there, and I think there's a lot more componentry now that is like swappable, so modular systems, so you can kind of swap in and out parts, and so you have a little bit more it's a lot more user-friendly and you don't have to rely so much on clinics. Electronic hands, like, you know, you get these 3D printed, like there used to be hands that had sensors on the forearm that would pick up the muscle twitches, and then you would reprogram your brain, you kind of relearn how to function a prosthetic based on the sensors on your muscles on your forearm. They were super expensive, and now you're getting kind of more like open source things and companies starting up, lots of people that are not only inspired by this project but also just the culture changing. There are a lot of aesthetics, so people are doing more kind of customizable features, so you could say, oh, scan your limb, send it to us, choose like your shin cover, you can have a different color or different material, and then it's almost like a shop, and you can just kind of, so that's more affordable and more user friendly. I think people are quite excited about the alternative prosthetics, and not, it's so typical to kind of follow the trajectory of sci-fi, like as in one informs the other and the other way around. So sometimes films, you know, inform what's going on in real life and the other way. And it sometimes gets a bit heavy with the kind of sci-fi obvious, like robotic aesthetic. Mm. And there are so many engineers, like I get approached all the time by people from all over the world. It's amazing. But loads of students wanting to get into this. I think there's actually a course in prosthetics, but from an aesthetic perspective now.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, like, is there a community that does kind of similar stuff to you, or is there a community sort of growing, evolving?
Well, there's just so many young people that are kind of getting into biomedical engineering and into prosthetics because they're excited by it from a design aspect, and so that's really exciting because that means it's going to be a whole new generation of people that are not just coming at it. I think maybe in the past it was perhaps you would maybe get more like carers or people or technicians, like lads on the bench kind of like that had been, I don't know, had their skills in aerospace or whatever, and they'd be kind of moved over, or engineering and they've moved over, or you would have prosthetists that are almost like nurses, doctors, you know, the kind of caring aspect. And I think obviously us designers are caring too, but kind of like coming from an aesthetic and excitement. And there's obviously a lot of, like I was saying, there's a psychological benefit of aesthetics. It's like the world would be quite a dull, boring place if it wasn't full of beautiful, exciting things.
Yeah, and how amazing to have been sort of blazing a trail in a field. And I'm right in thinking you do kind of talks all around the world about this sort of thing, right?
Yeah. Now I've been off to Slovakia to do a talk in October. Yeah, and then I was in Mexico recently doing a talk for the World Convention of Prosthetists. So, yeah, it was good. And it was really nice, actually, because it was nice to be recognised because I was a technician and, like, I had ideas and, you know, like all little people in companies. I've got an idea. and it was, they were really good enough to let me stay behind and experiment and stuff. But I was really... you know, they were very much like, oh, the next step for you would just, like, if you wanted to go higher, would to become a salesperson. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it was a bit kind of...
Yeah.
Limited, in a way, in their thinking.
Yeah.
So it was really nice to be recognised for doing something in the industry.
Yeah, that's properly cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. And just to sort of... bring it back to sort of Sussex and the sort of the cross-cutting theme with this podcast, and everyone that we're speaking to is people that live in Sussex or that sort of moved here as well. What brought you to Lewes?
Oh, yeah, so we were living in London at the time, and I think my ex-partner Toby and I had always liked the idea of Brighton, and family reasons were... kind of stuck to London, and then eventually when the timing was right, we just started looking, and then like all people kind of like, oh, you look at Brighton, and then you start moving out, oh, Lewes is really cool, oh. And I remember the teenagers just being really polite and quite just thinking, wow, that's such a good sign, like, of a place, and they had a kind of witchy vibe, and obviously with the bonfire, it's kind of like this kind of independent kind of side, and it's just really, really beautiful. I loved all the antique shops and the kind of quite a lot of quirky individuals. And there's a real art scene through. I mean, I've collaborated with a lot of local people that are amazing. I met a glass blower and metal worker. I saw him today, and he's just got this kind of shed set up in his garden. He's just like proper experimentalist. And he's probably going to blow himself up at some point. But he, I love working with people like that. And so collaborating with local artists is amazing. And I did think moving down to Lewes, I was like, oh my God, am I kind of like, you know, moving out of London? Retiring. Is that going to, is this going to be good for my career? But it's been great. Because I think often you just... There's sometimes so many opportunities in a big city. You sometimes, like, you make connections and then it's very easy to lose them. And I think when you're in a smaller place, it's like you make it happen, I found. I haven't joined the Art Wave thing, but I'd quite like to maybe next year.
Yeah, there's a particularly high concentration of just creative and just interesting people, I think, in and around Lewes. I don't know, I feel like it's on a ley line or something like that.
I guess being close to Brighton as well, and not far from London. What was your
when you first went to, like, Lewes Bonfire and saw the burning crosses and people kind of in questionable outfits, what was your first impression?
Yeah, I was a bit like, oh my God. No popery, that was a bit extreme. But I shouldn't say that. It was like really dramatic, exciting, and the whole town looks like it's on fire, doesn't it? So it's like, whoa.
I was just going to say, what's the nest in?
I think that was your question before. I went up on a massive tangent. So what? Tell me what the feature is. Oh, yeah. So for me, I'd like to really concentrate on projects that I really want to, I can really go to town with. So, like I said, not kind of like everyday pieces, but more kind of working with performing artists to like explore kind of quite interesting themes. So I'm working with a street performer, but he's a really interesting guy. He's Brazilian and he works the traffic lights. So he kind of like does this performing arts at the traffic lights. He climbs up a ladder and then he juggles and then he jumps back down all in the space of like a minute and then picks up money. I think he makes like 500 a day. I mean, he does that in Brazil, but he's obviously weather dependent as well. So, but anyway, he was a really interesting, lovely character. And I thought it'd be really cool to make a kind of, a limb that's smoked up that you could kind of smoke from, but isn't like as a wearable sculptural piece. Yeah, just like having like almost self-medication kind of, you know, the idea of, you know, when you kind of people like breathe through their through their pain, and sure. like an area that would otherwise could cause discomfort is actually kind of like, yeah, so I've got this idea in mind. I usually have a picture of the end. I've really got a really strong, vivid imagination of the end result, yeah. and even the way someone's sitting and the posing, or the way it's filmed, and then I kind of work deconstruct it and work backwards from there. Yeah. Usually, yeah.
So that vision comes quite early, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, and then definitely the vibe is always kind of like it's in tune with the initial vibe that I had, and then I kind of somehow. Yeah, kind of go into the more detail and how to make it happen, going backwards. Everything. So yeah, so that and then finding other interesting people. I've got about 300 people on, like, that have contacted from around the world saying that why they would want an alternative limb and how they became an amputee or what you know what. So all that information is quite interesting, and I'm working with a poet to kind of somehow sum up that information. They've all said yes to their information being used.
Yeah. So how do you choose to do next?
This is the thing. So actually, I had so many opportunities to turn it into like a regular business, kind of like you know, but that would mean batch production and. Like a lot of these kind of startups do, but I was really more focused on, than being unique. But anyway, sorry, what you're saying is, the thing is, number one, you have to be an amputee, obviously. Number two, you have to be at a stage of amputation to work with. I've had people contact me before they've had an operation saying, I'm completely inspired, I'd love to, like, have this limb. And it's like, actually, I couldn't work with you for another 2 years until, like, later down the line. I need to see that person, so they could be in the other side of the world, but I need to, like, see them regularly to make the piece happen. I could, if I streamlined it and I went into this kind of, like, 3D printing and batch production, but I'm not really interested in doing that. I kind of want to see that person. If I'm making a limb for them, I would want it to speak about them, so they need to be involved with a mood board and giving me, like, I usually ask for, like, 50 images that speak to them, and then ask them to deconstruct why, and then we go through that and I work with them on that, and then they've got to be able to afford it. And so because each project is completely unique with different set process and materials, it makes it more expensive. So all in all, it's like I can work with loads of people, but all that. So those. It would be wonderful to, like, have a sponsor or something. Oh, yeah, shout out.
Totally. You know, back of that, have you worked with any film industry? Are you...
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, so there was a limb sponsor, actually, through Konami, the computer gaming company. Well, not console, but they did games, and they did... it's such a long time ago.
Was it Mortal Kombat?
Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I had a friend that was working for them, and I said, oh, it's so weird, the idea of a company sponsoring a limb. Like, it's not going to be, like, their name, like, written all over it or anything. It's like, that's someone's body part. It was really weird. and she said, no, well, obviously, because we've got our connection, we'll make sure it's, like, tasteful and the person has a part in the process. And so that was a really interesting project. He was, they said, as long as he games and he's into the aesthetic of Metal Gear Solid, it's all good. And we can kind of take the lead on him from a design perspective. And so, yeah, that was really exciting. The BBC got involved in that. And we kind of got carried away. And it was like, for the budget, it was like, ended up, we had this, he said he really wanted a hand. I was like, okay, that's like going to be like, most of the budget. And so we had this like this hand that had sensors on his back that went around all the way down. So he had a long arm as well, and so they'd never done that before, where they were picking up the readings from his muscles on his back to actuate the fingers, and it was just like, it was, yeah, I mean, it was an incredible project. The whole arm kind of he wanted it to kind of come off itself as well. So it had all this electric circuitry, but then it also needed to be able to
detach.
Wow. Yeah. So so we managed to kind of do a lot for what it was, but then the BBC kind of got carried away with this documentary, and it was just like, it's supposed to be, and it got built up to say, it's supposed to be an amazing new technology, and it's like, this isn't like lab stuff, this is like, you know, working on a budget. But it was good. But I remember just coming in at like, oh, working all night. I think it was 3 weeks away from giving birth, and I did an all-nighter on it, and I remember the BBC was just like, can you deliver this? Come in with the arm. And I was like, I had sciatica, and I was like walking in like Quasimodo, like with this arm, kind of like, here's your arm. I've been working on it all night. It's just, but yeah, it was great. And then he went off to, I mean, the great thing about that was, what I didn't like about it was the way, obviously, media and stuff like positioned it like, this is going to change this guy's life, and it just got totally taken over by, this is the best new technology, and it's like, no, it was just like an art project. And we were, ultimately, James had said, what I'd like out of the project is, I'd like to look at an arm on the other side of the room and for people to say, that's James's arm, rather than like, you know, just any beige.
Yeah.
NHS prosthetic. And we totally achieved that. We did the disconnection, we played about with the sensors in the hand that he's never played with. It made him start thinking about his arm and what he would need from it to get maximum ability control, which made him think about having titanium implant in his arm so that he wouldn't have to wear a harness, because yeah, it got sweaty on the, yes, back, and then the sensors didn't work and was glitchy and stuff. So yeah, I mean, that's another amazing thing. Well, titanium implants, but there's a name for it. I've forgotten what it is. But anyway, where you have an implant right into the end of the stump and it's knitted into the bone.
Wow.
And so you have the limb hanging off the implant as opposed to having a socket. So you haven't got the problems of the sweating and the fitting.
Together.
Yeah, so then, yeah. So the titanium implant is basically sticking out, and there's essentially like an open wound around it because it's poking out the skin, but it's fused to the bone inside, and then you've got a limb that can just lock on and off. Mm. So you've got this, you know, direct feed. So when you're walking, you can actually feel it. It's not like, you know, it's much better.
Yeah.
And then... But anyway, and then that guy, that the opportunity was, then he went off to the science convention to America. He was asked to go over there, and it, for him, he said it was like a VIP badge to enter a world that he would have otherwise not been involved in. So all those kind of benefits that are not like the obvious, oh, you know, it's changed your life from a day-to-day perspective. It's more like, wow, it's like opened up your kind of mind to thinking about that part of the body and what you can do. Does that make sense?
Yeah. There is a massive, I mean, obviously, psychologically, and also, I mean, I think when people have gone through traumas like that, and trying to get them to kind of...
Yeah, people deal with it in completely different ways, and there's no set way. I mean, one guy had said he'd lost his finger in a kind of wood cutting accident, and he said he saw it on the ground, and he said he said if I'd acted sooner, I'd have put it in ice and it probably would be on my hand. But he said I'd actually identified the situation. I looked at the finger and I was thinking, right, that's my finger, that's not on my hand. I've had that finger for 40 years. That's not on my hand, and that is it is my finger, but it doesn't look like my finger. And he kind of had almost he'd kind of processed it all almost there. And he said afterwards, he said, I'm actually all right. I'm all right. Cause he said, I felt like I did all the processing by just staring at that moment at this finger.
Psychologically detaching from
and,
it.
And just reasoning through it all, just thinking, yeah, it was really interesting. And I've changed my relationship with my feet, because I'd say I've got not very attractive feet. They're kind of like quite, well, it's considered they're like veiny and bony and like, you know, I've got like a big, yeah, big bone on the side of my, like, big, I could get my feet out. but anyway, I made my own feet as an example of what I could do. And I just got, I was like, yeah, God, look at all those little spider veins. So cool. I've got so much character. And it's really great when you get like an old person with like yeah, blood circulation problems. You know, if you're making a realistic, you know, you can just really go to town with details and get carried away. And
well, Sophie, thank you very much indeed for talking us through all that. It's absolutely brilliant. If people want to have a look at the sort of thing that we've been talking about, where's the best place for them to go?
So the company's called, or the project is the Alternative Limb Project. So we've got a website. If you just type in Sophie Limbs or Alternative Limbs, it will kind of come up on Google. And then I've got Instagram, so the either Alt Limb Pro or the Alternative Limb Project will come up.
Awesome. Thanks very much indeed.
Pleasure. Thanks,
Sophie.
It's good fun.
Thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Chalk It Up. And if you did, please subscribe, leave a review and share it with friends and family. You can also follow us on Instagram at Chalk It Up Sussex Podcast, where you can find exclusive content, including video footage of some of our shows. Thank you for listening.